This is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend, Mike Miller.
Hi, this is Tommy DeSantis with Uptown Express, and you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. And we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest a good friend, the CEO and original founding member of Uptown Express, Mr. Tommy DeSantis. How you doing, Tommy?
Hey, Mike. Nice hearing from you.
Absolutely.
Doing good. Thank you.
That's great. That's great. Now, I know you guys are tearing it up in Florida, and you guys are quite an entity in Florida, and you've been doing it for a lot of years. How long has the group been together?
In April, we're going to be celebrating our 30th year.
Wow, that's fabulous. I don't think I've done anything for 30 years.
I'm sure you have, but, you know, we can't talk about it on the radio.
No, I understand how that goes. Well, Harmony Street lasted a long time as well, you know, so I got to leave them out of the mix. I know that within the group, the guys in that group, a lot of times when you're in a group, and I usually brag and I say, you know, between me and so-and-so, we got to have 100 years of history. But in your group, you probably have about 1,000 years of history because you have a lot of guys in that group.
Close your eyes. Take a deep breath. Open your heart and whisper. Tell me you love me. Tell me you love me. You love me.
You love me.
You love me. Hold me tight. Don't say goodnight. We have time.
lot of guys. We're at, currently at 9 people.
Wow.
And all of them are very experienced singers.
Right. Well, you know, let's talk about Tommy. Now, you grew up where?
I grew up in a place called Queens, New York, a place called Middle Village.
Right.
On the borderline of Mathis and Glendale, right in the kind of in the middle there.
Well, you know, okay, you know, Mathis was Mathis, and Middle Village was a little bit different than Mathis.
Yeah, a lot different, actually. More industrial in the Mathis area, but blue collar, Italian, Jewish families, Irish, a good mixture of people in Middle Village.
Right, right. And in your family, was there music in your family growing up? I mean, did your parents, indoctrinate you with music when you were a kid, or did you find it by yourself?
Actually, my cousin Mary, a cousin of mine, took me to my first rock and roll show when I was 12 years old.
Wow, where was that?
I think that was probably 1957, 58. It was a, I love it when my mind goes totally blank.
Was it a Murray the K at the Brooklyn Fox show?
No, actually it was Vlad Elliott and it was the Moondoggy show.
Oh, it was Alan Freed at the Paramount.
At the Brooklyn Fox, I think it was. I think it was a summer or Easter show was
wow.
My first time seeing that. I think I was just turning 13. I might have just been coming a teenager.
Wow.
So I'm thinking the year was 1958.
Hi, everybody. This is Alan Freed. Back in 1951 in Cleveland, we coined a phrase that became the biggest pop musical era in the world. The words rock and roll.
Wow, because we used to go down to the Murray shows, and we used to go to the Fox, and we used to sit, and we'd get online, and we'd get in, and then, you know, we'd kind of hide, and we'd sneak down to the front rows during the second show, and we'd see the movie in the show, and get a little bit closer. And the funny thing is that everybody smoked at the Brooklyn Fox, because, you know, they didn't ask you to put out the cigarette. So I asked Anthony one time, didn't all the smoke bother you? And he said, no, man, I used to put out my last cigarette on the heel of my shoe just before when we went out on stage, and I would blow smoke back at them. So there you go.
That's true. Now, God forbid you smoked, they put you in jail in a theater now.
No, I know that, you know, but the funny thing is, I mean, I stopped smoking about 25 years ago. And I don't know really how I did in the old days, you know, 5 sets in a club with smoke-filled club, had the cigarette hanging off the end of my guitar because we used to shove it in between the strings, you know, and still was able to sing. I don't know how I did it.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
But that's what we did, you know. So, you know, you saw your first rock and roll show. You were a young guy, and that, I guess, inspired you.
It definitely inspired me. And then when I went to high school, I had the privilege of going to school in Jamaica, Queens.
Right.
And there was two great record stores there. One was Tri-Bottle Records. And I first saw the group singing out on the street corner in front of Tri-Bottle Records. I was hooked. When I heard that harmony along with that rock and roll show, I said, no matter what I do in my life, I've got to do this.
That's great.
And
I had a conversation at Triborough Records when I was younger with Louis Lyman standing right in the middle of the store, and it was probably about a 45-minute conversation. And I was a young guy, but I just had to, like, tap on Louis' shoulder and say, hey, man, you know what? I got a group called The Islanders. We're signed with Relic Records. He says, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I guess he was just being kind. And Triborough Records was a great place.
Absolutely. I mean, some great. I met a group there, I think I was about 14, called the Chesters.
Oh, yeah.
And, right. And just a phenomenal group, and they're doing a cappella out in front.
Right.
And I tell you what, it gets in your blood. Once it's there, it don't go away. It just does not go away.
I think the Chesters were on Relic with us. We were the Islanders. We did, a couple of volumes on that, you know, and we actually, we did My True Story, we did Hey Hey Baby by the Salutations, we did a couple other things, but, you know, that was great doing that because it, you know, we recorded early, it was a good thing.
Cry, there is a story that I must tell of two lovers that I knew well. Now they must cry, their blues away. Cry, their blues away. His name was Earl. His love was Lorraine. She's a wonderful girl. Now they must cry. Their blues away. Their blues away. Love will make tears fall when your lover says goodbye. Then you will cry. Whoa. Your blues away. Cry. Whoa, your blues away. Their story ends, yeah. It was no lie. Haven't changed it to protect you and I, but we will cry. Whoa. Our blues away. Cry. Whoa. Our blues away.
What was your first group, Tommy?
My group was called the Velveteen.
Right.
It was, I think we started, it was late 1958, early 1959. We had a couple of the neighborhood kids. We cut some demos, went down to, downtown trying to sell the records to the record companies with
right.
no success. Then we changed the name of the group in late 59 or early 60 to the Enchantments, and that group stayed together. Not with all the original guys, but it still stayed together until 1979.
Wow.
We had some local success. We were on a lot of those compilated albums. You can look it up. I think we did Rock and Roll, Cha-Cha-Cha,
right.
and a few other things on them.
Right. What labels were those? Do you remember?
You know, one was Relic.
Down on my knees, down on my knees, down on my knees.
Yeah, one was well up there, was a few other ones, and then I guess people, when you went down and did a demo, they sold those demos to these companies.
Oh yeah.
You know, even without you knowing, and the next thing you know is you're looking through a record in the shop, and all of a sudden you see your group on it. You know, it's lost your way.
It's interesting because when I lived in Danbury and I had Harmony Street, every once in a while on a Saturday they would have guys selling like antiques and old furnitures, and they'd have old record collectors, and I came across a record collector. Now, the Islanders eventually signed with MGM Records, which was It was GMC Records, a subsidiary of MGM. Guy's name was Gino Moretti. I'm trying to find him. I don't know where he is, you know. As a matter of fact, Ray Cerrone wrote, of the Bell Notes, wrote one of the sides that we did. And we had a tune called Where the Lights Are Bright. But the tune by Ray Cerrone was called Baby Pack On. And just recently, I got an email from somebody from England who said that Baby Pack On is a Northern Soul hit and it's worth about $250. And I don't even have a copy. So I'm trying to find Ray Cerrone from the Bell Notes. I have no idea where he is, and I know everybody. And, you know, I'm trying to find that. So I said to the guy, I came across the record. I said, how did you get this? He says, we buy collections. So this record, it was a DJ copy. It was kicking around. I bought it for a dollar. And I played the heck out of it. It's all chipped and cracked. So I don't even have one that I can play. But, hey, you know, that's the way it goes.
Well, I found one of our records that we made in 19, I guess it was early in the 70s.
Wow.
With the Enchantments, I Can Never Love Another, on eBay, and it was bringing about 150.
Wow.
And I actually bid on it and won it.
Wow.
So I have one of the original 45s of my old group.
Wow. Now all you got to do is convert it to CD and you give it to me and I'll get it played.
There you go.
You know, so
well, I'll send you the 45 and you can do it.
Well, yeah, you know, there are ways to do that other than just holding a tape recorder to the speaker. You know, there are ways to do it, but it gets a little sophisticated. So the Enchantments, you know, that must have been a good feeling. You were a young guy, you know, and in those days, you know, a lot of girls. And also, you know, what we used to do, we used to go to Jones Beach and sing on the blanket and draw a couple hundred people and we drive around and jump out on a street corner in a certain town, start singing. And, you know, I'm sure you guys did that too. That was a lot of fun.
We used to do it on 98th Street in Rockaway.
Wow.
What a great crowd we would draw over there.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That was always a lot of fun.
And in those days, if you could really sing, people would just call them out, you'd chime off and you'd do it.
Exactly.
You know, and those were the real singers, you know. It wasn't like, you know, groups nowadays, they don't do a song on stage until they've rehearsed it like for 4 months. We used to just like chime off and sing the song, and then that separates the men from the boys, you know.
Right, definitely. We had a place called Cleveland Park that we used to go to, and it would be on a weekend, on a Friday night or a Saturday night, it'd be like a rock and roll concert out there.
Right.
With all the different groups. The five discs, Lenny Carter was a real good friend of mine.
Right.
He started singing with the five discs right after, I think, Carlo left. I'm not sure can't remember his name. But anyway, we would fill in, occasionally do all the record, what did they call those, confraternity dances, the basketball games at the churches.
Right.
St. Barbara's on Knickerbocker Avenue, that type of thing. That was always a blast.
You know, and I tell this to people all the time, if you've never done it, you cannot explain the feeling that you get being able to do that, hitting really good harmony with like four or five guys. It's a spiritual experience. And when people say to you, ah, come on, man, you're in your 60s and you're still singing this shit, you say, you have no idea what it does for me and to me. And it's probably at this age that, you know, one of the best orgasms that I could possibly have, you know, because
that's right. I'm 68 years old and we get on stage every weekend and I'm 15 years old again.
There you go. I mean, you know, it's
exactly.
Just, and a lot of times the women in your life don't understand and the people around you don't understand. They say, what do you get at it at this point? You can't explain it unless you've been there, man. It's just, being in the middle of the song, especially when you're tight that night.
That's right. And I tell them it's my drug of choice.
You bet.
It's my drug of choice.
You bet.
That's what gets me high, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Any chance to be creative. I mean, you know, I enjoy the studio as much as I do. And you know what's really funny? It doesn't matter whether you're doing it at a big show. It doesn't matter if you're doing it to 15,000 people. Look, Harmony Street did Shea Stadium during the playoffs to like 60,000 people. You know, we did a 25-minute show and the anthem. I don't care if you're doing it there. I don't care if you're doing it on the green in your town. I don't care if you're doing it to six people. it's that feeling that you get in the middle of a tune when you're in your zone and people are wide-eyed and appreciating it, and that is the payment. Everything else is gravy.
Exactly. There's nothing like going on stage and just letting your soul just come out in your voice. And it's a camaraderie. The guys that are in the group, it's like a giant family.
Oh, you bet.
It's our drug of choice. I mean, we go up there, you forget your problems, you forget the arguments you had, maybe with your boss or your girlfriend or your wife. You're up there and you're doing your thing, and that's what counts.
Right.
Yo, Tuff.
Yeah, man.
You remember the Moonglows?
Absolutely, that street corner sound.
Do you dare to do some Moonglow?
Let's do some Moonglow.
Robert, you in?
I'm in.
Big Bob.
Let's do it, man.
Tony, what do you say?
Hey, we're here in the subway. I'm game.
All right, I'll do the bottom. You guys do the top.
Most of all. I dream wonderful dreams of you. And when I awake, no one's there, and that's why I am so blue. Most of all,
you know, first of all, 9 people in the family is a big family. So, you know, I'm sure being that you're a family, you have good days, bad days, left days, right days, up days, down days. And I know we've had some, over the years, tremendous creative arguments. But when the creativity is over, then you all kiss and you hug and you go do what you do. You know.
Absolutely. All right. And you don't go to bed mad, and you don't get on stage mad.
There you go. I know. Well, you know, I can't stand groups that, like, you know, when it's time to get on stage, each guy walks from every corner of the room, and you just get on stage. I like groups that look in each other's eyes before the show and say, "Come on, let's kick ass." You know.
Absolutely. Let's have some fun. That's our say. Just before we go on stage, we do that. You know, the handshake, and
yep.
Let's have some fun, and we go up there and forget about anything that's been going on during the day. And, you know, we owe it to our fans, and you have to forget anything and everything else around you. You go out there, you're going to have a good time. Because if you're having a good time, your people are having a good time.
And right. No, I understand. And, you know, what's really funny is, you know, I came from New York City as well, and if I'm not mistaken, I think you found yourself on Long Island at one point.
I moved to Oakdale.
Right. I got you. And, you know, there were a lot of entertainment places to go and a lot of clubs in those days, every corner had a really good club. I mean, you didn't have to go very far. And if you wanted to go far, you could also have a good time driving 60 miles, you know, out to the island and hearing the best of the best, because so much talent came off of Long Island and New York City.
Most of the groups, I mean, the group I worked with, we were working maybe a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
It was
just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And you do three nights at one club, and the next weekend you're starting another one. You may run down to Jersey and do a show in Jersey, and then you back up and you go to Connecticut. But you're always working up there. During the 70s especially, we had that resurgence of our music, and it was crazy in the clubs. I mean, Brooklyn Bridge, everybody was out there doing their thing, and it was a wonderful time.
Well, I happened to be at the Cloud Nine the night that the Del Satins and Johnny and the Crests were there, and Rhythm Method, and it all came together. I actually was at the club because I was a regular there. It was the Etc. Lounge and then the Cloud Nine, and that was one of my hangouts. So as a matter of fact, they had all the guys from Joe Weider's magazine as the bouncers, whoever's happened to be on Long Island, the Dave Drapers and the Dennis Tinarinos and all these guys. They were all the bodybuilders. So if anybody started anything in there, they just lift you up, carry you out into the parking lot, throw you onto the gravel, and you were done.
You know, the amazing thing, though, for all the years, probably the 10 years that we worked all the clubs out in Long Island, I've never seen a fight in one of the clubs.
Really?
You know, the people that came for our music, they weren't fighters, they were lovers.
Right.
You know, it's the music of style and romance. There wasn't no hidden meetings in our records. There was nothing controversy about our music. We just talked about, you know, puppy love and all those crazy things we did as a kid. And the mood was just so mellow all the time. You know, we've never seen any problems.
Right.
But the disco era changed that a little bit. But
no, I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know, it's funny, too. During the 70s, I had switched around a little bit, and I was in a couple of top 40 groups, and of course, you know, there was a lot of R&B 70s stuff, so we were doing stuff like the Manhattans, and believe it or not, I laughed because my interview this week, my show this week is Cuba Gooding Sr., and I reminded him that we opened up for him in a couple of Long Island clubs when he was with the Main Ingredient, and we had some good times then, you know.
Hi, this is Cuba Gooding, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
You know, doing the R&B, but I always say that the R&B was just the extension of the doo-wop stuff, because believe it or not, the Intruders started out as a doo-wop group.
Right, and so did the Temptations.
Oh, yeah, you know, for sure. You know, one was just an outgrowth of the other. So from the Enchantments, then, what happened to that group eventually?
Pretty much it broke up after I left and moved to Florida in 1979. For some reason, I was trying to hold it together, but, you know, everybody had lives that they wanted to, you know, pursue, and we were doing it exclusively for a living for almost 10 years, so I guess it was starting to get old for some of the guys. We were approaching our mid-30s. We thought, you know, wow, we're old already.
Right.
And moved down here to Florida and thought, well, I'll never do this again. But in 1984, through an ad in the paper, actually a little before that, it was a lot of guys that would show up that really didn't know the music. But, you know, you went through maybe 20 guys and you found one guy that halfway decent and you started working on it. And that's how the Uptown Express evolved.
My window, I watch her as she passes by. I say to myself, you're such a lucky guy. To have a girl like her is truly a
my imagination. Running away with me. It was just my imagination. Running away with me. Soon we'll be married and raise a family.
I know how that is, auditioning and all of that stuff, because when I had finally stopped singing for a while, then my brother got sick. Actually, he contracted AIDS, and I was, kind of down about it, of course, because I knew that his the diagnosis was not good. And the thing that got me, kind of got my head in the right place, I built a studio. I was living in Danbury, Connecticut at that time, and I put together a CD of all me. It took me months, and I did all the parts, and it was called Michael in the Dreams. And I sent it to Don K. Reed, who was a good friend, and he said to me, you know, I'll play some of the stuff. Obviously, you can't come. I says, why don't you put another group together? So I started looking around and whatever, and I auditioned for a group on Long Island, and I'm trying to Street Corner Society was the group.
I remember it.
Yeah, they were a Long Island group, and I sang. There was a house full of guys, and I sang a couple of leads, and the guys came over and he says, "Don't leave," and I said, "Okay," and they said, "Just don't leave. You know, we got to go through all these people, but don't leave." And I stayed the whole night, you know, whatever. And they said, "When can you start?" And I was living in Danbury. It was like a 2-hour ride out to Massapequa. And I said, after making the ride back and forth after a couple of weeks, I said, "I can't do it, guys. It's just too long." So I put an ad in the paper, and that's when, you know, people started marching through my house, you know, for Harmony Street. But as you said, you know, you audition all these people, and guys would come in, "Oh, I sang with so-and-so, and I sang with this guy, and I sang with this guy," and I said, "I'll call you." You know, it's like, if I'm going to put a group together, it's one thing to get a group tight, but it's another thing to teach somebody how to sing. And I didn't want to have to do that. So,
right. That's the hard part, you know, to get the guys that know the stuff immediately. And that's what we were looking for when I started a group. But I actually wound up teaching three of the guys how to sing. They had great voices. They had great potential. And I figured, you know what? The guys that I was interviewing to come, I told one guy to sing high, he stepped on his heel. You know, he put on his, went on to his tippy toes. Uh-huh. I said, no, I don't mean sing higher, and I talk like volume higher, you know?
Right.
You know, that's the kind of guy that I was getting.
Well, that's like the old, that reminds me of like the old Abbott and Costello thing.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed. Remember from the Doo-Wop Shop?
You could actually take 5 or 6 really good singers and put them together, and maybe they won't blend. You know, finding guys that blend is, you know, all of a sudden one day, you know, you step into some magic, because not every good singer can blend.
Right. That and personality, that's another so important thing.
Yeah, well, when we had Harmony Street, we had Dee Heverin. We called her the blonde in the middle. We placed her right in the middle because she was blonde. And, you know, she got a lot of attention. I had 3 ladies in the group. But she would always say to me, "I can't hear myself in the monitor." And I would say, "Dee, when you can hear yourself in the monitor, you're too loud. You need to hear the blend. That's
right.
What it's all about. You, in other words, you want to hear the blend. You don't, you know, when it's really blending, that's when you're, you know, in the blend. Because really and truly being tight is 51% listening.
Exactly.
And that's what I always taught them.
That's so important. And we just had a situation, where we lost one of our singers and, passed away. And
can we mention his name?
Yeah, sure. Bruce Goldie.
Bruce Goldie was one of the finest individuals I ever met. He was a sweetheart, and he was a very talented man.
Bruce Goldie was not only talented, he had a great personality and knowledgeable, probably one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met in this business.
Right.
Easy to get along with, just, you know, great personality.
But when we
lost Bruce, we were looking to put in another person. We had found a bass. Actually, our original bass for the Uptown Express wound up being our sax player, and then Bruce took over the bass part. Then Nick came back, and so we figured we'd maybe find a first tenor or a second tenor. Now, we interviewed this guy, and he was very upset with us because, you know, he was a good singer, but when he sang with us, he did not blend. It just didn't work. There was no magic in the blend. And he was very, very, you know, he's very sad that he was not, you know, asked to join the group, and he just couldn't understand it.
Right.
But it's hard to relate to somebody that's really not experienced enough to understand that there's got to be that blend, and this gentleman just didn't have the blend.
Well, not everybody is a B.J. Jones or a Les Levine.
Right.
Exactly. You know.
Yo, Tuff.
Yeah, man.
You remember the Moonglows?
Absolutely. That street corner sound.
Do you dare to do some Moonglow?
Let's do some Moonglow.
Robert, you in?
I'm in.
Big Bob.
Let's do it, man.
Tony, what do you say?
Hey, we're here in the subway. I'm game.
All right. I'll do the bottom. You guys do the top.
Oh, no, no.
Most of all, I want your warm embrace. No one can take your place. I need you most of all. I dream wonderful, wonderful dreams of you. And when I awake, no one's there, and that's why I am so blue. Most of all, the
it's funny, you know, 7-inch vinyl, the book.
Right.
Don Riggio wrote the book, and he sent me the book, and I read the book, and I said, you know what? The Duquesnes need to come alive. So their hit was Bouncing a Kiss Off the Moon. So I said, why not? You know, there needs to be a song. So he said, you need to write it. So I did, and I did it in my studio, and I did all the parts. I don't know if you've heard it. I'll send it to you. And then I said, you know what? It needs a bass. And the second tune that the Duquesnes did was a cover of That's the Way It Goes. It's in the book. So
right.
I also recorded that, and I said, also needs a bass. And I'm not a bass. So I called Les Levine. I gave him the tracks. He recorded the bass parts to both tunes up in New York. He sent me the tracks raw. I mixed them in. And then I sent them to Bruce Barriel, who is Jimmy Clanton's engineer, who mastered Jimmy Clanton's new CD, and he mastered them for me, and they're out on Amazon, and they go along with the book, but I needed Les Levine in order to finish the project.
Bruce was a great singer. He originally was, you know, when he came to Florida, he joined the Five Boroughs.
Right.
Hey, this is Frankie Iovino, formerly of the Bob Knight Four, many years. Just Friends, the five disc, and presently with the Five Boroughs here in South Florida on Mike Miller's Harmony Street Show, one of the greatest guys around.
And moved on our coast and spent at least 8 or 9 years with us. We were happy to have him. And unfortunately, he succumbed to cancer last December.
Right.
And we lost him right after Christmas, so it was a terrible thing.
The last time I saw Bruce was a couple of years ago. Well, you know, I say a couple. It had to be good. It had to be at least 6-7 years ago when I was with the Mystic Group. We went to the West Coast. We sang in a club. Don't remember the name of it offhand, but Bruce came to hear us. Place was packed. We were talking outside. And of course, Bruce, that's when Bruce was Bruce, you know, and we were kidding around as only he could do. And, it was a good thing. And, I would say to Bruce all the time, you know, we're one of the few two together, along with Jay Siegel, that understand Jew-wop.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I always used to kid with Jay. Jay says, never mind, I invented Jew-wop. And I would say to him, you know, the flamingos were Jewish, Zeke. You know, the original flamingos were all very religious Jewish guys.
Get out of here.
Yeah, yes, they were.
Really?
Yes, they were. The only one that wasn't Jewish was Terry Johnson, and Terry also had a biblical name, as coincidence would have it. His real name is Isaiah.
Right, I know that.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, the flamingos were Jewish, though. That's not a, secret.
Wow.
I have a question for you. Do you know Dennis Hurley?
I know the name.
Yeah, Dennis was the lead singer of the Magic Touch when we were up in New York, and we did a lot of shows together with them. And then I know he came to Florida. I know he's not with the group anymore. I think he does a radio show, and I think he's been doing some singing in northern Florida. I'm not sure exactly what town. I figured you might know him, you know?
I know the name, but I had never met him at all.
Right.
There are a few guys that used to sing with us that are up in that northern Florida area. They started a group called the Empires up in, I think, Jacksonville.
Uh-huh.
One of our original two singers, I think we started Bobby and his wife Sandy, mm-hmm. and they started a group up there in northern Florida, up in Jacksonville.
Do you know Guy Tan?
No.
He sang with a group in Boston called North Shore A Cappella, and they were around for many, many years in Boston, and they sang every Wednesday night in this Italian restaurant for like 35 years.
You know what? We did a show with them probably in the mid-70s.
Right.
In Boston.
They were a great group.
Absolutely. But see, our group had stepped away from the a cappella, and we had a full band.
Right.
And they came in and actually opened the act for us. Phenomenal group. Really great sound.
Doesn't
and then they got their shot on that that a cappella show that's on Monday nights during the Christmas season.
Right.
Sing-off.
Well, you know, what's really funny is that it shows you what a small world it is when you sing this music that... I always say there's 6 degrees of separation. There aren't. There were really two. And if you move down to Florida, there's like 1.5 degrees of separation, because you and I could speak for 15 minutes and probably make a list of 35 guys that we know mutually.
It's a small community of you know, all these singers. I hate calling it doo-wop, but, you know, that's, we named it doo-wop, so that's just this.
Well, I had, Jimmy Keys from the Chords, when I was a dean in the Bronx, I had his kids, and he had them a little later in life, and they were not great kids, Paul and Jimmy. You know, they were always in trouble, and I had Jimmy Keys in my office all the time, and I used to take him to career day, and he'd tell how the black groups never got the respect, and the white groups would cover their material. And Jimmy died pretty much penniless, you know, and it was very sad. You know, that would happen. But Jimmy would always argue with you and say, there's no such thing as doo-wop, man. We were singing R&B, we were singing jazz, we were singing blues, but we never sang a note of doo-wop.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
What was his name? Gossett coined the phrase,
yeah,
doo-wop.
And I've heard some people dispute that, but, you know, if you want to give Gus Gossett the credit, yeah, okay, you know, but... you see, really and truly, doo-wop can be broken down into a lot of categories as well. If you read the books, you know, and the sociologists get into it, they talk about the R&B part of doo-wop, and they also talk about the Italo doo-wop, you know, and then, you know, where you had the floating falls with the triad of the three guys making the chord and the bass separately. Then they talked about doo-wop. There were some groups that had the bass buried in the mix, like the Skyliners. The bass
right.
is almost indistinguishable unless you take it away, and then you miss it. But then you had other groups where the bass was very, very distinctive, you know. And then you had the nonsensical syllables, you know, as far as doo-wop goes. You know, it's amazing how many phases doo-wop went through. I was very close to Speedo, to Earl Carroll, and I even called him while he was in the nursing home and spoke to him just about every week, even when they wanted to take his leg and they wouldn't let him do that, and he wanted to come back, and in his heart he knew he wasn't going to come back. But One of the, you know, I always marvel at the fact that Speedo is remembered for the up-tempo doo-wop and the stuff that he did with the Coasters, but the Cadillacs did so many great ballads that it just blows your mind, and people need to hear all of that stuff. You know what I'm saying?
The Cadillacs, I think their slow tunes were epic. They were beautiful.
Exactly.
Epic. Window Lady.
One
better than the other. Of course, Gloria. I mean, everybody does Gloria, but I think the Cadillacs, you know, bar none, is the best.
When Speedo got on stage and he sang,
exactly,
"Girl, I love," and, you know, with that big smile showing every tooth in his mouth, man, that was like the quintessential moment of a doo-wop lead singer, you know, because the word "girl," he made that a 16-syllable word, you
right.
know, and you know, it was just fabulous, you know, "You Are," you know, those things.
"The Girl I Love."
Amazing.
One better than the other.
Amazing stuff, man.
"The girl I love, she's going away. The girl I love, she's going to stay. I'll dream of her each day she's gone.
You know, there were certain songs that a lot of groups wouldn't touch because there were a lot of street corner groups that couldn't sing certain tunes. You know what I mean? And then there were also the tunes that separated some groups from others. You know what I mean? It's, oh, no, we can't sing that one, man. You know?
That's right. Yeah.
I had three girls, so it was easy for us to do Unchained Melody by Vito and the Salutations, but I've heard very few groups really pull that off and cop it, you know, the way it's supposed to be done. What are some other tunes?
Great bass runs in that song. We have a good bass now. I mean, Gary Knight, I don't know if you know the DeMonicos.
Uh-huh.
Gary was with the group from the original, from when they first started, and we're really happy to have Gary with us. He can pull off stuff like that with no problem. I mean, he's really good. It's now, it's trying to get the guys to do the falsettos thing now that we're getting older.
But right.
The bass parts is really great.
Right. Another tough one is "You Belong to Me," 5 discs.
Right. Another wild bass. That was the typical Brooklyn doo-wop, you know? That
oh, yeah.
The five-disc sound was definitely the neighborhood thing, you know?
Well, you know, when Vito Balsamo had the falling out with Dave Rick, and Dave went to put the other Salutations together, I went to the first auditions, and I was going to join that group, and I did about 2 months with them, and then I finally dropped out because that was a long ride, too. And I was going through, a divorce and this and that, and I said, I don't have the energy for this. But that was funny, and Vito and I laugh about it now, you know, because he and Dave Rick still have a mutual hate affair going on, so... And Dave Rick is still alive. He must be like 140.
It's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah, no, it really is. So I'm assuming that over the years with all the groups that you had, you worked with all of these colorful agents as well in New York.
Oh, yeah. And that one that comes to mind right off the top of my head is Mr. Norby Walters.
Norby lived later on in my parents' building in Fort Lee. When my parents moved from Long Island and they were thinking of coming to Florida, they moved to Fort Lee in Mediterranean Towers for a while. In Mediterranean One, right over the bridge in Jersey, lived Joe Pepitone, Buddy Hackett, Norby Walters, my parents. I'm trying to think of who else lived in that building. A lot of colorful people. And, Frankie Valli lived in that building. And I saw the feds take Norby out in handcuffs one Saturday afternoon while I was visiting my parents, because he started a sports agency and he was doing sports, figures, he was strong-arming them, you know, after their contracts were over, you know, yada, yada, and the feds arrested him. He did a lot of time.
Well, Norby was good to us. You probably remember King Broda.
Of course. King Broda used to say to me that he was booking groups where he booked their fathers and their grandfathers.
That's right. King Broda was great. I mean, if you wanted to get into a club in Long Island, you needed King to get you in there, because doors would not open unless he gave you, his blessing. So
oh, yeah.
He was very influential in the area.
Oh, yeah. And then there was creative talent, if you remember.
We only had Norby and King.
Right.
And then when we first started, we had a gentleman by the name of Jim Gribble.
Oh, well, Jimmy,
He was managing the group for a while.
Big and Jim Gribble.
Then, right, Big Jim. Then we had Norby, and then we had King Broda. And we got really lucky in the late, mid-70s, actually, probably around 77, Joe Scandori, who managed Don Rickles and Tody Fields,
oh, yeah,
picked us up, and it was heaven after that. I mean, doors were really open for us. But no doo-wop groups were doing the things that we were doing at the time, and we played everywhere. Any place we wanted to play.
Did Neil book you, Neil Hollander?
No, Neil never booked us. It was all done through Joe, whoever
cool.
booked Don Rickles. So.
Very, very cool. You know, it's very sadly, I saw Don Rickles over here at the Kravitz Center a year and a half ago with Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers opened up and she said, the son of a bitch, Don Rickles, he hires this 28-piece orchestra that I got to pay half for. And just because he sings one song, he wanted a 28-piece orchestra, he can go screw himself, yada, 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 yada. Rickles came out afterwards, told a couple of jokes, and then, much to my dismay, he started telling the same joke over again and got lost in the middle of the joke and said, oh, wait a minute, did I tell you this one? Oh, wait a minute, yada, yada, yada. He did his famous calling two people up on stage, but he didn't realize that at the Kravitz Center, you have to walk, if you're in the third row, all the way down, all the way across, all the way across again, all the way up the stairs, all the way across. So it took these people like 8 minutes to get up on the stage. People started walking out. And Don was screaming at people, screw you! Go ahead, walk out. I hope you can't find your car. I mean, it was...
I could imagine. You know, he wasn't like that I mean, you know, when we were working with him in the 70s.
Of course not, but you know.
He wasn't a neat-spirited guy. He was really a sweetheart of a guy.
I know, but it was very sad to see him lose it when, you know, everybody held him in reverence for so many years. I sang in the Catskills for a lot of years, and I sang with every... I was on stage with every comedian, Morty Gunty and Corbett Monica and Sandy Baron and you know, all of them. Buddy Hackett, who was one of the nastiest guys off stage that you could ever want to meet. Just a nasty guy. Very funny on stage, but real sharp edge and very nasty. You know, most people don't know that.
I never had the privilege of working with him, but... With working with Tony and Don, they were a trip. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, Tony Fields was one of the best.
I bet.
And when she lost the leg, she became funnier.
Yeah, because you know why? Because it brings your soul out. You know, it's like you get down to the root of things. You know, when you're under pressure like that. You know.
We used to do the shows up at the Concord and Grossing.
Oh.
Phenomenally, right?
I did the Nemeson, the Neverly, the Concord, the Raleigh, the Windsor, Wiener's Bungalow Colony, you know, all that.
We must have crossed paths at least once.
Oh yeah, Larry Chance was doing all of those as a single for a long time, and I was at the Raleigh Hotel, and this is way back. Johnny Maestro was there with the Brooklyn Bridge. He had the whole kit and caboodle. They were working in the lounge. There were two or three people sitting in the lounge, and they're doing the whole show full tilt. And I went over to him, and I said, John, why don't you guys, you know, are you crazy? Why don't you guys, like, do three more tunes and then wrap it up? He said, are you kidding me? He said, we're the Brooklyn Bridge. He said, you know, we are going to give them every note, every morsel to the last tune, or until they leave. You know, I don't care if there's two people sitting there. I said, yeah, I guess you're right. You know? He was something
else. That's another true gentleman. We really lost a great person when he passed away.
I spoke to John the night before he passed away. Grace put him on the phone. Johnny Farina was there. And he was saying a little meek voice, hi, Mike, you know, how you doing? You know, it's, oh, this really sucks. And, you know, da, 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 da. And I said, you know, be good. I love you. And the whole thing. And I never realized until I read it on Facebook the next day that he had passed away.
Yeah, what a shame.
You know, and it was,
working with him was just a great pleasure in my book. Uptown had the privilege of opening for him at least 3-4 times.
Oh, yeah.
He was on, you know, here on our West Coast, so. We, you know, he was always a gentleman.
You bet.
The whole Brooklyn Bridge, just a bunch of wonderful guys.
There were a lot of Harmony. As a matter of fact, Harmony Street and the Bridge did Newtown High School in 1989. And actually, the kids that were going to that high school then were the parents of the kids that were lost at the Newtown shooting, believe it or not. And I was talking to Les about that not long ago. You know, he says, oh, yeah, wow. He says, yeah, you're right. I thought about that, too. Johnny was funny. Most people misunderstood John because he was very shy and he was very laid back. And they mistook him for being a little uppity or aloof or, you know, standoffish, but he wasn't. And he was extremely funny and very dry. Ellen in my group used to bake a lot. When we used to do shows with them, she used to make like a cheesecake or a whiskey cake or whatever. And a lot of times they would come back to Ellen's house and hang out if we were doing a show in Connecticut. So she baked a cheesecake and a whiskey cake. And we did 90 minutes one night. And they came on and they used to do like an hour and a half in those days. So, you know, it was a big show. As a matter of fact, Richard Nader was there with his mother and his wife. Not Debbie, but his previous wife. And I remember Richard was at that show. And John and Freddie and Les demolished the cheesecake. And Ellen said, well, you know, that's okay. It was for you guys anyway. And they all have cheesecake all over their mouths. And Johnny used to pace before a show. A lot of people don't know that. He'd pace, and then he'd line his pockets with his Halls Methylyptus little cough drops so that when he was in a long tune and he couldn't swallow, he would get the drool running down the side of his mouth from the cough drop that most people didn't know. And he gets up and I says, John, you just ate like a pound of dairy before the show. I says, coats the throat, he goes. Gets out there, gets through the first tune. And if you know John, he always had the cordless mic that had the little on-off switch on the bottom, not on the front. And time after time, he would run out there, and the first few words of the first song, you wouldn't hear him, and then he would turn on the mic on the bottom, and then it would click on because he would forget. He gets through the first song. He's choking like crazy. He walks off stage, throws the mic. He says to me, "You go out there." I said to him, "Au contraire." I said, "See, I told you the cheesecake was going to kill you." He goes, "Shut up." And they went out. And I remember in the middle of the show, they go to do I Thank the Moon, and Marty gives them the chord, and they go to sing it a cappella, and they crash and they burn. And it's the first time I've ever heard the Brooklyn Bridge in a situation like that. And John says to the crowd, "You know, back in New York," he said, "on the street corner, everybody got one do-over." He said, "We're taking ours now." And the whole place stood up and cheered. It was like, wow. You know, because
he was an incredible performer.
You never heard them make a mistake. You know, the other thing that Johnny used to do a lot was he used to pace back and forth in front of the monitors. He would get out in front of the monitors instead of standing behind him and walk back and forth in front of the monitors. He couldn't hear the monitor. You know, very interesting guy and a slave driver at a sound check.
You know, I watched him, you know, again, having the privilege of opening up for him with the Uptown Express,
right,
four or five times, I watched him do his sound checks. I mean, first the group does they get all the mic checks done,
right,
and then he comes up and does his thing. But he was extremely meticulous, and that's why they had such a great show.
I mean,
they were pros.
There was never one note that wasn't supposed to be there. I mean, everything was so click. But here's something that a lot of people didn't know. And, you know, I know this. And do you know that all those years they played to tracks?
I know they had tracks for the horn system when we were working with them a couple of times.
The whole band used to play the tracks. And because there were nights when Marty couldn't show up, John would have all the tracks, and he'd just step on a little foot pedal, whatever, and they'd play to the tracks. And I never realized that until one year. And I said, and the other thing people didn't realize, and I love you less, but you know, John took all the tunes down a half tone towards the end, so as not to kill himself. No, what they would do is they would all tune down a half step.
Right.
They dialed the tracks down a half step, and they would tune down a half step so that everything would be played in the same position, but they tuned down a half step. That's what they used to do. And just interesting. I mean, look, they're still out now. You know, Barry Newman and I, we did a couple of shows together, and we had J.T. Carter, we had the Del Satins, and we had the Brooklyn Bridge when Roy Michaels was singing lead for them, and we did very well. It was shortly after Johnny passed away, you know. And they're still out there, the Bridge, you know. And people who are real fans, you know, they're going to go see them, you know. But let's get back to Tommy. So the Enchantments, you know, you had a lot of fun with, and where did you move from there?
I moved right from there to this coast of Florida, where a place called Cape Coral.
Right.
That was 1969, and I actually started getting the group together about 83.
Right.
And we had the Nucleus completed by 84.
Right, and who was in the group then?
Bobby and Sandy Lapree, Tony Squitieri, and myself.
And all these guys, you know, had really mega experience as well.
Yes, except for Sandy. She actually was Bobby's wife.
Right.
And that was the first time we ever sang with a girl in the group. But he took the time out to teach her first tenor, and she did a phenomenal job. She really did. Matter of fact, the first show we did on your coast was 19... I think it was 1986 1986, we did the Sheridan Bar Harbor with Hop Tone. Great show. And the group went over really tremendous. Alan Cypher got us involved with that show, and he was in charge of the Doo-Wop Association.
Yeah, that was the South Florida Doo-Wop Association, yeah.
That's right. Yep.
Alan I still keep in touch with, and he tried to kick it off again for a while. You know, it started off, and then I guess it kind of fizzled a little bit for some reason. You know, it's great when you have a girl singing first tenor, because I had three girls. The only problem was when I had the girls singing background, I had to get on my tippy toes and be really honest, because they had very high harmonies, and we couldn't take the keys too low. But, of course, you know, when you're singing like five nights a week, and I learned this pretty fast, I'm only singing once in a while now. And let me tell you, I've lost something off the top. I'm going to have to start singing every day and get my chops up there in order to be able to get the few notes that I lost, you know?
That's right, because that's a muscle in there.
You bet. Yep. You bet. And you know what? Singing is more about getting things out of the way and letting your natural voice come through rather than pushing anything out. A lot of guys think, oh, you got to muscle it out, you got to push it out, you got to push hard, you got to push your diaphragm. It's not true. What you need to do is, because your body knows what to do naturally. We all have the ability. It's to relax your body enough to let your voice come up and out. A lot of people don't understand that. It's all about relaxing and stretching those chords and warming them up and getting your jaw loose and getting your throat loose. That's when you have your best nights, you know. You always notice when you're doing a short show, you're just about warmed up and the show's over. When you're doing a long show, the first five tunes, you know, you march through it, and as the night goes on, you really warm up.
I loved when we did all set, like, you know, six, seven tunes, and then we were going. But now we do like 3 hours. We do 3:45 sets.
Wow.
And, you know, it seems like we just did a show Saturday, and you're just cranking. By the time you're done, man, you're at your peak. You know, it's great stuff.
Well, you know, I'm going to venture to say this, because I've been playing guitar since I'm like 10 years old as well, and I played in a lot of groups. I used to play through a Leslie. Years ago, I used to play guitar through a Leslie. That's another story. But basically, if your drummer and your bass player are on, that's the secret, because everything else kind of lays on top of that. And I have, over the years, one of my pet peeves is musicians that don't know how to play behind singers. Because I can't tell you how many doo-wop shows I've gone to where you know, you lose the harmony because of guys that, you know, want to hear, bass players that want to hear themselves and drummers that want to hear themselves. And, you know, playing behind singers is an art. My cousin produced Steely Dan all those years. His name is Gary Katz. All right. If you look on any Steely Dan album, you know, Becker and Fagan were always produced by Gary Katz. You can be cooking and you don't have to be loud to be cooking. And that's the whole secret of where it's at. You know, you can be cooking. You could be nine pieces and cooking, and you don't have to be screaming loud.
Exactly. We're really lucky. We have our drummer. His name is John Cortese.
Right.
He was the original drummer for the Barons that made Possibility.
Oh, okay.
So John's been playing the drums behind doo-wop groups forever.
Right.
John's easy on the cymbals. He knows when to bring it up. He knows when to lay back, you know. Really fortunate, because we've had some psycho drums before in our group, but
yeah.
John's laid back. He knows what to do. He knows when to do it.
I mean, I've been with drummers where they'll actually give you a little diddle-ip just before your lead comes in, you know what I'm saying, if you're not paying attention to the intro and everything. And, you know, those are the real seasoned drummers that take the group up on top on the bridge, and they bring them back down on the bridge. And, you know, it's like those are the guys that you really want to work with, because on the road, when you're bringing charts, when you're doing big shows, you send your charts out 6 weeks before a show, and they're supposed to look at them and go over them, and they don't open up that envelope until the sound check. and they just march right through the stops and all of that, and they really don't care it because they're playing for like six other groups, and they charge through them, and it's tough, and every night is different, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's a tough way to go, but that's, you know, that's the business, you know? It's tough.
Band, and we're probably one, us and the Barrels are probably one of the only two groups still playing without tracks. I mean, we still have full bands behind us,
right?
And you know, in South Florida and Southwest Florida.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there was Reunion, and when Reunion started to break up, that's when Joey Neary kind of came with the Mystics at that point, and Joey's still with the Mystics. But the guys from Reunion, the nucleus of Reunion, are still around doing good things, and they're still singing in other groups and doing some stuff. I got a project going with a guy that comes up from your way. His name is Phil Spina. He's a songwriter. Do you know him?
I know of him again, but yeah. I never met him.
Yeah, we're doing a project together. I'm kind of co-producing that, and he's getting some big groups, you know, Del Satins, Dubs, Original Riffs, some of the other groups, and we're going to do a big CD project that's going to take about a year and a half, believe it or not, and just to be creative. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do a song or two, and the Del Satins are going to back me up on them. So, I mean, that's going to be a lot of fun, just getting Stan Zyska singing background for me.
Hi, this is Stan Ziska, original lead singer of the Delzatins, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. And I'd like to thank you, Mike, for making me the first interview on your show.
You know, and we had the opportunity to sing with you when, was that a few years back when we did that benefit on your coast? I think that was actually probably about 8 years ago when you were with me.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that show. That show, now let me think back. Was that the show Terry Johnson was in that show? Was he not? And the Flamingos?
I think he was, yeah.
And there were some really good groups. Bro Cream, was that one of the...
Right, we brought Bro Cream over with us. You know, two of the guys from Bro Cream actually sang with us, originally sang with us probably in the 90s.
Right.
John Minor and Richard Beatty, the two of the original guys in the Uptown Express.
Go ahead. That was a great show. That was a really good show. I remember that show, and I think that I was just starting to go out with Paulette then. Paulette and I had just got, so that, I mean, that had to be about 7 years ago, six, 7 years
ago. Yeah, it was probably closer to 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, I think I had just met Paulette. It was one of my, like, first dates, I remember. That was, and I think at that show, during the break, when I said to the Mystic guys, let's start singing in the lobby during the intermission. And I think I got them all together and I started singing in the lobby and everybody that was signing autographs and buying CDs from the other tables started like pulling away and walking over to that table. And I said, oh my God, what did I do? They're going to hate us.
Dirty pool.
Yeah, dirty pool, right?
That's a great idea though. I think I'll use that the next time we do a show.
Yeah, it's an old Harmony Street trick. Do that and just while you got the autograph people around, just step in front of your table and just like do like two a cappella tunes. In your face. And people just like, they eat out of your hand when you do that. Yeah, that is dirty pool.
I love it.
Let me ask you a question. What is your favorite tune to sing with your group right now?
You know, I really love doing like something like Never Never.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Some of the real high tunes. I love watching Bob's chords in his neck burst.
We did that one too, and I actually sent it to Eugene, and he liked it. Eugene invited the Harmony Street girls down to Herkimer Street years ago, like he wanted to buy them clothes. He said, oh, I got this great place where you girls could buy, like, outfits matching and yada, 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 yada. You know, they were great, and we went, you know, we had a lot of fun with them over the years, Eugene and Frank Pitt, you know. They were good. He's still one of the true gentlemen, and still going strong.
Absolutely. He's still not hanging out in the corner in Brooklyn anymore, though.
No.
I think he moved upstate New York.
Yeah, no, I know that. Well, you know, what's terrible is that we're losing them right and left. Every day you get a phone call or you read that somebody that you really cherish has gone.
This is Eugene Pitt of the Jive 5. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. I heard your name was Mike. Mike at the mic. And things that I like. Your show is a thriller. So here we go with Mike Miller.
I'm going to ask you something. Are you like me? Like, I've been on stage with a lot of my idols for years and years and years. But I am still so in awe of certain people that, like, when I'm in their presence, like, my knees get weak, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just, Anthony is one of them, you know, Speedo is one of them, people that I can kid around with. You know, I'm very friendly with Jimmy Clanton. He's another true gentleman. I always tell him, that I said to him one time, do you realize how good looking you are? And he goes, oh man, cut it out. You know, I mean, somebody said, and then you still have some people in this business that are really full of themselves.
I just love you know, the Earl's, what's his name?
Larry.
Larry Chance. I mean, to me, every time I'm around him, I get chills. I just, the guy's my idol in the business. One of my idols.
I had the pleasure of going to rehearsals when they were in Yonkers and they used to rehearse. And Larry had the van that used to say Santana Banana on the side of
right.
it from the Imus show. And I was very, very friendly with Butch Barbella, you know, when Butch was with the group. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Larry and Chaz Palminteri and Butch had a studio on Allerton Avenue right over the taxi stand down from Gino's Italian restaurant in the Bronx called the Bronx Connection. And they used to record there. And I had the pleasure of going up there and just being a fly on the wall sometimes. And if you ask Larry about it, you go, oh man, you know, that was like so long ago. I even remember Larry when his name was Figueredo.
Yeah, another true gentleman, by the way, at Doo-Wop. I mean, nothing but a sweetheart.
Oh, I mean,
his ego is, you know, it's nil. I mean, he's just one of the guys when you're hanging with a guy, he's just phenomenal. He's always been my idol. Always probably will be.
Well, you want to know something? He would be very glad to hear you say that. And that's how he is. He reaches out and he touches the people back. You know, he calls everybody Pally. Hey, Pally. How you doing?
Absolutely. What a great guy.
Yeah. So what is Uptown Express up to these days?
We've been really busy. I mean, knock on wood, we lost another member of our band just recently, so we had a little bit of regrouping to do. And then our poor first tenor, Mr. Joe Russo, had a hip operation that got infected with that MRSA, which is very, very bad.
Yeah.
So we weren't booking up until late November when we started rebooking again.
Right.
We were lucky to have, I don't know if you know Dan Caspitori. He stepped in and did first tenor for us, so I've been pulling off some of the jobs. Matter of fact, we'll be doing one of our last shows until New Year's Eve.
Right.
Tomorrow night, and then Joe will be back with us again. But we've been very, very busy doing car shows. We just did the Mikado car show down here in Southwest Florida.
Right.
We're all over the place. I mean, if you're in Southwest Florida, come and hear us. You know, we'd love to have guys come up and say hello to us.
I'll definitely take a drive one of these times. I mean, you know, we can actually hook that up. But, you know, I laugh when I hear all kinds of stories and I hear groups that say, oh, my God, we can't get arrested. We're not getting work and yada, yada, yada. And then I hear other groups that say, oh, man, I don't know what's going on, man. We're just not working. And I say, well, you know, what's going on? Wow. Come on. We haven't sung in like 3 weeks. You know, our next job is like 3 weeks away. And then I say to myself, there were some big groups that only worked like 6-8 times a year, you know, that had million selling records, because for some reason, you know, doo-wop is still alive, but it's not alive everywhere. I just don't know. You never know when people are going to come out to your show and not, you know.
Exactly. Well, not that way, you know, being here 30 years in our area, we have a great fan base. And we don't play a lot of outdoor concerts. So when we do, we still draw a pretty good crowd. We're working about 90% country clubs right now.
Right.
But we still do our car shows, and like we did this weekend, and we drew a monster crowd this weekend. Great. We play a place called The Stage in Bonita Springs once a month.
Right.
Just always a great crowd there, a lot of fun. We'll be at Flounders in January 10th. I think that's in Northport.
Right.
And we're all over the place. We'll be in Port Charlotte. We're everywhere.
So tell me, Tommy, who is in Uptown Express now?
As of right now, we have Robert Atmore. Robert's first tenor, second tenor, and lead. Robert's been with the group since 1992.
Right.
Then we have Bob Stewart. He's first tenor, lead, second tenor. Bob's with us now going on about 11 years.
Long time.
Gary Knight, originally with the Delmonico's. By the way, Bob Stewart sang with the Cordials.
Right.
On Laramont Records, I believe. Caramont, that's what it was.
Right.
Robert was a Brooklyn boy who sang with the Bloors and the Chips.
Right.
As a stand-in guy.
Wow.
Gary Knight is our bass guy. We got Gary actually doing some leads with us. He's got a great voice. Originally with the Delmonico's.
Right.
He's now with us. He's going on his second year. We have Dan Cacciatore, who was with the Chaperones after Tommy and some of the guys left.
Right.
Danny's our fill-in guy. He's the guy that filled in for Joe Russo, who's also first tenor and lead singer.
Right.
Currently with the group.
Right.
Then in our band, we have John Cortese.
Right.
He's our drummer. Juan Costello, who used to be with the Saints and the a few other groups that we mentioned when we talked.
Right.
Ron's our guitar player. Luke Casanova is our keyboard and left-hand bass. Well, we eliminated the bass player, which is great.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking for a sax player right now. So if we get out there on the air, anybody from the Southwest Florida area and is looking to play a couple of nights a week, we'll give you an on-telephone number, and you give me a call, we'll hook you up.
All the guys in the group come from really seasoned players. And that's great to have. But that also brings with it a lot of creative differences. How do you pick the tunes in the group?
You know what? Everybody that does a lead will pick a song that they want to do.
Right.
It's got to be a mutual agreement on the song.
Right.
And then we work it out. I mean, so far, really, there's very few songs that a guy will come up and say, I want to do the lead on this that we haven't been able to do.
Right.
Which is great. So we let the person that wants to do that tune pick the tune he wants to do.
Right.
And we work it out. You know, we make it happen.
Right. Now, here's something I'm going to ask you, and this is a creative thing and whatever. Another one of my pet peeves is guys that insist on doing tunes in the original key, even though they can't sing it in that key, when knowing that they can take it down a half tone or a whole step will ensure that it's right in the pocket. You arrange the harmony around it, and it sounds just as juicy. Guys that insist on singing it in the original key and not being able to hit the notes. And, you know, everything is in the arrangement. I learned that a long time ago, you know. And when you have musicians around you, to tell the guy that's hitting that note, sorry, pal, that note is not in the chord. Here's the chord. Let me, guitar player says, let me strip down the chord for you. Here's your notes. Here's a third and a third and a third. There it is. The note you're singing is not in the chord. Lose it. It's great to have those guys. And that's, you know, go ahead.
Mike, this is where they have to leave the ego at the doorstep.
Right.
When you join the Uptown Express, you leave the ego alone.
Right.
Okay, you leave it someplace else. We come in here and we work the tune out. It doesn't have to be in the original key. The group is talented enough to invert the harmony to make up for the lack of maybe a lead not being in the original key and make it sound like it actually is in the original key by inverting the harmony.
Yep.
So yes, I agree with you. Does not. We had a couple of guys that came in actually in auditioning for the group and said, "No, you got to sing the key in that in the original key, or else it doesn't work." That's baloney.
That's not true because you know
you can work that tune out.
And the truth is, look at how many tunes have been recorded, and then another group covers the tune, and they do it the way their group does it, and it's still the tune. I mean, and that's how, I mean, look at how many keys. Gloria has been recorded in E, F, F sharp, and G.
Right.
By a lot of groups. And it's still Gloria.
You know, when we first started singing that song, Ali was singing it in G. Now it's in F. You know, we
invert
the harmony, and it works.
Absolutely, because it's still there. You know, I agree with you 100%. A good friend of mine is John Madara, and if you know John, he's from Philly. He wrote Rock and Roll's Here to Stay. He wrote At the Hop. But another tune that he wrote that most people don't know that he wrote is Play Those Oldies, Mr. DJ by Anthony and the Sophomores.
Right. Great tune.
Very few guys can sing that tune in that key. Anthony's a eunuch. And yet, I've heard that tune sung in every different key, and it doesn't lose anything if you have the arrangement right. You know, and that's kind of proof of it, you know. There were bands on Long Island. Now, I don't know if you go this far back on Long Island. There was a group called the Encores. Lead singer was a baritone. And I remember him. He was a good-looking guy, but he was pretty much of a baritone. He wasn't a high tenor. And they used to do tunes in lower keys and invert the harmonies and everything else. And, man, you close your eyes, you couldn't tell the difference, man. They had like 6-8 pieces behind them, you know. And, you know, they did what they did, you know.
When picking a tune, it's got to work for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
The lead singer has got to be comfortable. The group has got to sound good. There's so much stuff out there to pick from. You don't have to be, you know, hung up on one song. If it don't work for your group, you leave it aside. I mean, nobody's offended by it, which is great. That's why I think we've been together 30 years, because we know what's realistic and when's not. You know, when nobody in my group is going to be doing any Frankie Valli anytime soon.
Okay.
We don't have that Frankie Valli credit.
All right. Yeah.
But we do Moon Glows. You know, we had the guys to get through the Moon Glows.
Yep.
We can't do Four Seasons. But
right.
We can do, you know, we could do Earl, we could do a lot of stuff. So you pick and choose the right stuff for your audience and for yourself, you know. No sense of doing something that you're not capable of and then coming out halfway. You know, you got to be 100% and don't do the song.
Well, how many tunes do you guys have in your repertoire?
Currently, probably close to 200.
Wow, and that's a lot of tunes, man. It's a lot of words and it's a lot of tunes. So if people call on a tune, so in other words, when somebody requests a tune, chances are you guys are going to be able to do it.
Chances are if they put it on a $100 bill,
right,
we'll wing it.
There you go. No, I hear you. I hear you there. You know, that's very interesting too. I remember doing a show at Kennedy High School. I don't remember. We used to do Harmony Street and the Capris, Harmony Street and the Impalas, Harmony Street and the Brooklyn Bridge, Harmony Street and Jive 5. And that's the way I used to book it, because we could hold our own. And the fact that I had three girls, it didn't bang against the other group where we were doing the same material. You know, we could jump around a little bit. One day, a woman jumps out of the audience, walks down, puts her hands on her hips, and says, you know, like at a moment when we had just ended a tune, "Do you guys do Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me?" And I looked her right in the face, kiddingly, because when you have the microphone, you could do this. I said, "Do we look like a goddamn jukebox? We're doing a concert here, lady. Would you please go back to your seat?" And everybody laughed, you know, whatever. And so she turned around and she dug in her bag and she threw a quarter at me, as if to say, "Here you go, jukebox." And they laughed, and they laughed again, you know. And I said to the audience at that point, "If you're going to throw money, please throw paper, because the dimes and the nickels hurt."
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you know, we try to stick to our set list when we're doing a three-hour show. But, yeah, you know, somebody comes up and requests is something that we do.
Right.
We'll try to fit it in. If it fits into the venue, we'll do it.
Yeah, because, you know, and then there's always the tunes that you really want to do. Like, you know, even with Harmony Street, I mean, we used to do some tunes that weren't mainstream tunes. You know, people used to say, "Oh, you know, you're going to scare them with that tune." But we used to do Lorraine by the Bonnevilles, and we used to do What Time Is It? And we used to do, you know, some of the other tunes. As a matter of fact, we were lucky. We did a tune because I had the girls. I don't know if you know the tune by Margot Sylvia and the Tune Weavers. It was the last tune that Margot sang. It was called Come Back to Me.
Yeah, Beautiful Songs was on that album out of Collectibles, I think.
Exactly. Well, we did a version of that the Tune Weavers loved, by the way. Robin sang it, and we had that and my version of Lonely Way with Harmony Street, and those were the only two tunes that Starlight Discs, that Bob Kretschmar ever put on Starlight, that had music on them. Because,
yeah, and they were great tunes. I have them, by the way, in Starlight Collection.
Oh, that's, yeah, Starlight 2000. Magic Touch was on that CD. But
right,
I talked him into letting us do them with music, and it killed him, but he gave in. I took a ride to Staten Island, and I spent the whole day with him, had dinner with his family. We talked all day, and he agreed. And I think that was like a major coup. You know, that I got him to break character, you know.
When I got that at CD, I was trying to figure out, why did they put these two musical things on you, you know? That's funny that you mentioned that, but I remember that.
Yep.
Saying, wow, you know, I never heard anything with music on Starlight. How come you did that?
Yep, you did it. And what we, and
you did an Indian burn on him, and he gave in.
Yeah, there you go. And, yeah, I threatened him. So, yeah, and Bob's a great guy. I mean, you know, He's just a terrific guy. He wishes that he could do it again. He told me some great stories as far as things that have happened in the studio. They had, let me tell you about Starlight this. They had the guys that they sent to master those tunes, you know, because when you do a cappella, it's very funny how when we used to record a cappella, we used to do it to a click track and a guitar. And then we'd wipe the click track and the guitar. This way you stayed on beat and you stayed on pitch. You know, strict a cappella in the studio is, you know, usually a lot of times if you start the tune in G, you know, you end up in F sharp because somebody lost a little energy and everything. And that's the beauty of a cappella. Well, He had some guys that mastered his stuff that were very good. They were out of Philadelphia, his mastering studio, because most of the Starlight CDs were mastered beautifully. Very smooth, very, you know, they managed to smooth out most of the stuff that went in there. And he put out a lot of music on Starlight, you know. I mean, that was amazing. Collectibles is another story. I have a CD on collectibles with Harmony Street. I got one with the Mystics. You know, the Hushabye Again CD. I don't know. Have you heard the Hushabye Again tune?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I will send that to you. That was one that I did with George and Joe Neary and Shelley Brill. And that's on collectibles. As a matter of fact, the CD is entitled Hushabye Again. I don't know why they don't do that tune, the Mystics. You know, they should, but it became a very controversial tune within the Mystics. So.
Yeah, well, just leave that. I understand.
You know, whatever. But I'm proud of it, and I will send it to you. How do you think the music business has changed since you started singing this stuff on the street corner and now you are singing it in later years? What are the changes that you've seen?
Well, first, I mean, when we first started, it was a cappella. Then it was the big production numbers with the full band. And now it's back to tracks again, which I don't understand. That's why we're kind of like someplace in the middle.
Right.
We have the four pieces of music behind us, five pieces, and we're a full complement to that.
Right.
We're trying to stick with that. Even though we're not making the money that most groups could go out there and make with tracks,
right,
we still don't want to compromise that. But that's how much that changed. And of course, you know, the money we were making back when we were singing the clubs, we were probably making more money then than we were making the clubs now, so. That's a big change right there.
Oh, I hear you, because I remember doing clubs on Long Island for $35 a man. And I even remember club owners coming over to us when we were young kids and saying to us, I'll tell you what, guys, instead of paying you tonight, I'll get you all laid. And I would say to the guy, can I have the money, please?
Yeah,
and I'll go home and I'll play with myself. You know what I mean? You know, that was, and I started singing in clubs when I was 15, you know. And we used to hide from the cops when they used to come in and everything else, but we were really young. I mean, I remember doing, the Crazy Cricket and the White Brick Inn and,
You could have said that. We were 14 years old. We did the White Brick Inn.
Oh yeah. And then we did we progressed to Mario's on Hillside Avenue in New Hyde Park, the pizzeria. I talked him into putting music in until his plate glass window went. And the funny story is that Joe Neary and I knew each other in high school. He went to Mineola, I went to Herrick's. He was in an opposing group. And when Mario got tired of hearing our sound, he hired Joe Neary's group. And Joe used to play drums standing up. He was a tall, blonde, good-looking, blue-eyed kid that played drums standing up and sang. Yep.
Well, there's a major change in the music. You know, we were playing the pizzerias back then.
Oh, yeah.
And the record stores and that type of thing. So, we're not doing the pizzerias anymore. That's
well,
for sure.
Here's one thing, and that is that no one knows what to do with a recording these days. What are you going to do? Give it to collectibles and make, like, a percentage of a percentage of a penny? You know,
right, exactly.
and whatever, you know, then a lot of people have your product, but you don't, you know, you get like, $100 every 2 years, or are you going to put it on iTunes and Amazon for $99, you know, and hope, or you put it on YouTube and then everybody listens to it and you say, have a nice day. You know, I mean.
Actually, we sell ours at our shows, and that's where, you know, I think that's where the money's at.
Well, you know, along with that, I will tell you that Harmony Street always had a $10,000 or a $12,000 kitty, because I had Ellen in the group, and her husband, Mitch, was my best friend. I actually put them together. They're divorced now. But anyway, Mitch used to hawk cassette tapes, later CDs, but cassette tapes, and we would print them up. We would run them off 50, 60 at a time and sell them for like $10, $15. And people would buy them, But then when people weren't coming over, he would take the box around and he would stick them in people's faces and he would say, 2 for 10. And he would like say, here you go. And when you stick it in people's faces, they're more apt to take out the money and buy it than to have to walk all the way over and buy it.
Right.
And Mitch,
exactly.
Mitch, we used to walk home from a gig. We'd make an extra $600, $800, $1,000, $1,200 from selling product all the time. And we always had a full kitty. We were able to record or do this or do that. You know, we had a mailing list of about 5,000 people. So I sent out a trifold mailer, which cost me a lot of money in those days, with a million concerts on it, you know. And we knew if 10% of our people came, we could pack every place. And that's probably what you guys have. Take
some. Yeah, it's the way to go. It's,
yeah.
It supplements what we're making now. And it doesn't make a difference what coast we're on. I mean, I've seen the same thing. You know, I talked to other groups in the East Coast, West Coast, Northern Florida, Southern Florida. It doesn't make a difference. You know, it's pretty much a standard price what you're going to get for a full group, whether you're with a band or with tracks. It's, you know, it's tough out there. But if you want to work, you go out there and you do it. And that's the part of it. If you could sell your product and make up the difference, you know, that's a better deal all the way around for everybody.
When are you guys coming out with another CD?
You know, we talked about that. We were going to do it this summer, but with Joe, with the hip thing and then losing Rick,
right?
So we passed on it and then we got ready for the season instead, you know, being shorthanded. So we probably will wait for the summer. We start slowing down here in May. After May, we'll probably put, we have an idea what we want to put on it now.
Right, so right.
We're going to put really obscure stuff on the next one. We don't care.
Yeah.
It's for us. You know, we're going to do the stuff we want to do, you know.
I always say, like, when you look out over an audience, a doo-wop audience, there's the guy who owns the car, there's the guy who washes his car, there's your accountant, there's the guy that you see that you bring your money to at the bank, there's the guy that's your dry cleaner, there's the guy that is the packs your groceries at Publix, and they're all together, sitting shoulder to shoulder, and they're all got one common goal, and that's to listen to the songs that they love, and they're all focused on the music, and it just brings all walks of life together, and everything kind of stops, you know, because it's all about the song. It's not about your ego, as you said. It's not about, like, whether you're a star or not a star. It's not about whether you own the trademark. It's not about, you're mad at me from 30 years ago, whatever. It's about the song and it's about the music, period.
Yeah, I try not to ever burn a bridge in this business.
Yeah.
I try to stay neutral no matter what. I mean, sometimes you just bite your tongue and just go with the flow. But, you know, again, you know, it's for the music. It's a common goal we all have, you know.
Yeah, I know. If people want to get in touch with you or get in touch with Uptown Express or people want to buy you a CD, how would they go about doing any of those things?
All right. First off, our website is www.UptownExpressFLA.com.
Gotcha.
And there is a place where they can get the CD, they can order it, or they can call me directly for booking or for information about the group, or just shoot the breeze.
Right.
At area code 239-290-5190.
Right. So are there any old doo-wop singers out there that you've lost touch with that you would like to get in touch with that you can't find? Because I always find that.
You know what? They found me.
Oh, yeah?
I just hooked up with a person I sang with almost 50 years ago. And luckily, we got back together and became best of friends again. And he just passed away on 4th of July.
Wow.
But, you know, they come out of the woodwork once you're on Facebook and those social media sites. So thank goodness for those things. And it keeps all the guys honest, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I found all of the Islanders from years ago on Relic, and, you know, that was cool. And one's an insurance agent, and one is a professor at Stony Brook, and one is, you know. And it's funny, I got coming up, this is the first time I've mentioned this, but, you know, do you know Abe Santiago?
Yes.
Okay. Abe has a new book coming out, not the one that he wrote about UGHA, which is pretty controversial at this point, but he's got a new book coming out after the first of the year called Brothers of Another Color. And he asked certain people to write a chapter about their lives in the book, and I wrote a chapter. He asked me to write a chapter about my life, which was, you know, very nice. And it gave me a chance to talk about the Islanders and some of the groups that I've been in and whatever, whatever. He asked me for 2,500 words, and I gave him about 1,625 words. And he said, I'll take it. And I put pictures in there, and there were no pictures of the Islanders anywhere. There's one on Relic on an album, which is not the right picture, because by the time they recorded, they weren't, you know, they didn't have all the names and the faces. But I got a picture, one of the only pictures that Tommy Jacalone had that he found in a book that we kind of, you know, restored a little bit. And that's going to be in the book, which is thrilled to me because, you know, just getting it out there because, like, everybody says, oh, yeah, you know, there was that group. Yeah, well, now I have a picture.
There you go. And you know, it's funny you said it makes up in it. Somebody sent me a picture of an album cover, and the group was on it, and I think we did rock and roll, cha-cha-cha or something. I don't remember exactly what we did. But they had the pictures of the Enchanters. It was the wrong guy.
Oh, yeah.
But it was us singing, but the wrong picture. I don't know who the guys were.
Always, that always happens. That always, as a matter of fact, Relic was famous for getting names wrong, pictures wrong. The other one that's famous for that is Eddie Engel. You know, Crystal Ball Records, you know.
Right, Crystal Ball. I had to think about that for a minute.
Eddie calls me up all the time. Give me a tune. Send me a tune. Or somebody, I'm on a lot of compilations, you know. I have a project, you know, my Michael and the Dreams thing, and I do a lot of tunes where it's all me singing, and I call it Michael and the Dreams. And Michael and the Dreams are out on an awful lot of compilation CDs where it's just me, and nobody knows that it's just me, you know. But I'm on collectibles, and I'm on, as a matter of fact, Mickey B, when he did his Volume 2, he closed Volume 2 of Mickey B's, you know, greatest doo-wop stuff with my Harmony Street ballad, you know, Harmony Street by Harmony Street. And to me, that was really nice. And, you know, he says it. He gets on. He says, well, it's time to shut it down. And what better way than to tell you that here's Harmony Street by Harmony Street. And that was cool, man. I didn't know he was going to do that. And he was a mensch. He said, I want to rent the tune. And I said, no kidding. And he says, yeah. He says, you know, I don't just want your permission. I want to rent the tune from you. A lot of guys don't do that. They just take your stuff and they put it out and they say, you know,
exactly.
What are you going to do about it? You know.
Well, I don't mind them taking my stuff.
Well,
the more people play it, the better.
So, Tommy, it's been great talking to you, man. I love Uptown Express. We've worked together. You guys are great. I wish you much success over the coming years, and I hope you keep rocking. And I hope that I get a chance to see you again close up and personal and maybe get to do a couple of tunes with you guys, because you guys are all great guys and, you know, you're a credit to this genre.
Well, we thank you very much for the support, Mike. Thank goodness for you that you're keeping our music alive out there. There's no us without you, so, you know, that's very important for us. So
I
appreciate it.
I hear you. I want to say good night, Tommy, and you have a good night and a good holiday week. Let's talk more. Let's keep in touch, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Later.
Thank you very much, and a happy new year.